92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station if children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parish Show.
All right, I'm here. My name is Gary Parish. I'm talking to you from 54th and Broadway, Midtown Manhattan, New York City. Brad Carson, back in Memphis, back in studio, producing the program. Glad he's with me. Glad you're with me. Hope you're getting through the day. No obstacles. No disruption. And I hope you didn't have a ton of money on Memphis getting its first road victory over a quality opponent this past weekend, because it did not happen. Close to happening. They led in the second half, but ultimately lose 79-72 down at UCF. So now the Tigers are 15-11 overall, 7-6 in the American. They're 78th at KenPom. We'll talk Memphis basketball momentarily, but first, quickly, let me set this afternoon schedule for you. 420, Drew Hill covers the Tiger basketball team for The Commercial Appeal. He was down in Orlando for Saturday's Memphis-UCF game. Had some interesting quotes from Jeremiah Martin afterward. I'm going to talk Memphis basketball with Drew Hill. He's going to be here right around 4:20. When I finish that segment, I'm going to do four notable stories at 4:44, at which point I'm going to discuss four previously undiscussed stories. Among them, Kentucky humbled Tennessee late Saturday inside Rupp Arena, snapped the Vols' 19-game winning streak, so now Tennessee and LSU are tied atop the SEC standings. Kentucky just one game back. I'll talk SEC basketball around 4:44. UT's loss means there's a new number one in college basketball. I have Gonzaga number one in the CBS Sports Top 25 and one. Duke is number one in the AP poll. We'll talk the top of the college basketball rankings and why I don't think it's crazy, even though lots of people seem to think it's crazy to have somebody other than Duke ranked number one. We'll get into that a little later on this hour. The NBA All-Star Game was last night, to the surprise of nobody. There were a lot of points scored. I'll talk about that just before 5 o'clock. And the Memphis Express finally scored a point this past weekend, but they still lost. So our professional football franchise is now 0-2. Next up is a game against Steve Spurrier's team. Talk about that during four notable stories at 4:44. 5 o'clock, Jeff Coggins, just like always, then I will eventually do dinner to go and get out of here. So that's the rundown. Got a lot to get to, but I wanted to start with Tiger basketball. Big game Saturday down in Orlando. Tigers had a chance to get their first road win against a quality opponent. They led in the second half, but could not hold on, so they lose it 79-72. They're now 15-11 overall, 7-6 in the American, 78th at KenPom. And the reason this was a big game is because it was a big opportunity, not necessarily to get on the NCAA tournament bubble or any of that stuff, but because it was an opportunity to show that their troubles on the road were no longer the troubles to the extent that they had previously been, because, yes, they've got a road win at Tulane and a road win at East Carolina, but the truth is Tulane's terrible. East Carolina's terrible. You just beat them at home, on the road, neutral court, Mars, wherever you play them. The issue had been against quality opponents on the road, starting with Temple back on January 24th, the Tigers had not only struggled, but like struggled massively in the first half. They went down by at least 20 at Temple, then lost 85-76, went down by at least 20 at Tulsa, then lost 95-79, and then went down by at least 20 at South Florida. That's the game where they were down 27-1. And they ended up losing that one 84-78. So this was the first road game against a quality opponent since that bad stretch of three games. And quite clearly, undeniably, they were better. Even if they lost, they were better. They did not go down by 20 in the first half. So, like, you know, baby steps. That was a good start. They actually led in the second half. But then Jeremiah Martin gets a technical foul for going back and forth with somebody on UCF's bench. Whether that was a properly called or a bad call is up for debate, but either way, it happened. And then they just could not make enough shots, get enough stops down the stretch to win or even cover the 6 points that they were getting from odds makers. So they dropped to 15-11 overall, 7-6 in the American. And then afterward, Jeremiah Martin delivered what was an interesting quote. He told Drew Hill from the Commercial Appeal, who's going to join me here in the next segment, the following. He said, quote, "I feel like I'm the best player in this league. I feel like we have the best coach in this league. And I feel like we're the best team in this league, to be honest," end quote. So I was like, okay, Jeremiah Martin feeling himself a little bit. Now he's scoring a bazillion points. He's been playing well. Cowboy Carson, I'll ask you, which of those points that Jeremiah Martin made is closest to being true? That he's the best player in the league, that Memphis's coach, his name's Penny Hardaway, in case you forgot, is the best coach in the league, or that Memphis is the best team in the league? Which one is closest to being true?
The closest to being true is, okay, they're clearly not the best team in the league. That one's easy, so no, not on the best team. Jeremiah, as good as he is, has to score a bunch of points, but yet I don't think he's the best player in the league. There's some other examples of that. I think the Penny Hardaway one is the closest to being true, because if you look at his first recruiting class, if you look at everything he's done in less than a year, that is the closest to true. So Penny Hardaway is the one.
Well, let's start where we agree quite clearly, and that's that there's no way to intelligently argue that Memphis is the best team in the league.
Right.
I love that Jeremiah Martin's thinking that way.
Yep.
I do think Memphis going forward, not in this season,
yep,
but at some point, can be the best team in this league.
Right.
Perhaps when it has, you know, James Wiseman blocking shots and DJ Jeffries scoring from the wing.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just no way to argue Memphis is the best team in the league. It doesn't matter how you evaluate basketball teams, you cannot intelligently reach that conclusion. The computer rankings don't back it up. The eyeball stuff doesn't back it up. The record doesn't back it up. The truth is, Houston is ranked in the top 10 in the country. They're 18th at KenPom. They are 60 spots better at KenPom than Memphis. There's no way you can argue that a team that is 60 spots worse than another team in the same league is the best team in that particular league. So if you want to argue Memphis is one of the three best teams in the league, or four best teams in the league, or five best teams in the league, I think you could make that argument. But you're going to have a really hard time trying to crack the idea that Memphis is one of the top two teams in the league, or even the best team, or and especially the best team in the league, because Houston and Cincinnati both play in the American Athletic Conference. Houston's 25-1. Cincinnati's 21-4. Houston's 12-1 in the same league that Memphis is 7-6 in. Cincinnati is 10-2 in the same league that Memphis is 7-6 in. Houston and Cincinnati are both top 35 at KenPom. Again, Memphis is barely top 80. You cannot make the argument that Memphis is the best team in the league. That is the least true thing that Jeremiah Martin said. The other two, I do think you can sort of chop it up a few different ways. I don't think, like you, that Jeremiah Martin's the best player in the league. I think it's probably Jaron Cumberland.
Or B.J. Taylor's pretty good, too. That kid that was at UCF.
B.J. Taylor's terrific. Yeah. Corey Davis at Houston is terrific. Shiz Austin at Temple is terrific. Mm-hmm. They are all very good players playing for teams that are, at the very least, at least two games ahead of Memphis in the AAC standings. But I will say, Jeremiah Martin has been terrific.
Yeah.
He's been the best player in the league over the past few weeks, or at least the most productive player in the league over the past few weeks. Sometimes that production can be a byproduct of what your team is asking you to do.
Right.
You know, if Jeremiah Martin were playing at Cincinnati or Houston or UCF, it's possible, if not likely, that he wouldn't be asked to do all of the things that he is doing right now. So you can argue whether or not he's been the best player in the league over the past few weeks, but I there's no arguing that he's been the most productive. And so I do think that that's a – when he says, "I'm the best player in this league," I believe I'm the best player in this league, whether it's true or not, you could make that case in a way you cannot make the case that Memphis is the best team in the league. And then it was interesting. He said, "I think we have the best coach in this league as well." And obviously, you know, this is a league that has Kelvin Sampson in it, that has Mick Cronin in it, that has Greg Marshall in it, that has Dan Hurley in it. I would stop the list there, but the list has to start there in terms of quality college basketball coaches who have, you know, a proven track record. Kelvin Sampson has coached in the Final Four. Greg Marshall has coached in the Final Four. Greg Marshall has had a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. Greg Marshall has taken an undefeated team deep into the season. And so if you wanted to say, I think there's no other coach in this league I'd rather have than Penny Hardaway, I'll sign up for that.
Yeah.
There is no other coach at Memphis that Memphis should prefer other than Penny Hardaway. But I was thinking about this earlier, or over the weekend when the quote first surfaced. It'd be like if some guy who, by all accounts, has an incredible future, pops into the NBA. In middle of his first season, when he's 15-11 and 7-6 in the league, you saying, I think that guy's the best coach in the NBA. I think that guy's better than Greg Popovich.
Right.
I think that guy's better than Rick Carlisle. You'd get a lot of pushback, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
It might be true that this person has a brighter future than Rick Carlisle, brighter future than Greg Popovich, is about to run the NBA year after year after year after year. But when you're in the middle of your first season and you're 15-11, 7-6, I don't think you can make the case that the best coach in the league is that guy, when other guys in the league have won to the level that some of the other guys in this league have won. Specifically, Kelvin Sampson at Houston, Mick Cronin at Cincinnati, Greg Marshall at Wichita State, even Dan Hurley at Connecticut. I know Dan's in his first season at UConn, but before he was there, he was winning at a pretty high level at Rhode Island. And so I get where Jeremiah's coming from, but I think at least two-thirds of the points that he made on Saturday after the loss to UCF were a little overstated. Perhaps he's right that he is the best player in the league, but the other stuff, it'd be hard to argue those things and win an argument. All of that said, like I said, I love that he's thinking that way. Because it would be one thing if he just stopped at, I think I'm the best player in this league. But he decided to rope everybody else in.
Yeah.
It wasn't just, I believe in myself. It was, I believe in myself. Mm-hmm. I believe in my coach. And I believe in my team. And I thought what Penny Hardaway said afterward sort of underlined that. Penny said, quote, I see the tide turning. I see everything switching over. I see where we were just trying to do our own thing for a whole season and not buying in, and now guys are starting to buy in. This is vastly different than what you've heard from him after other road losses or losses in general. He's rarely, Penny, been, and I don't want to say he was upbeat there. I wasn't in the room. I'm just reading words.
Mm-hmm.
But he's rarely been upbeat or positive after losses, even losses to good teams that were supposed to beat him. You know, he wasn't upbeat after the loss to Texas Tech. He wasn't upbeat after the loss to Tennessee. And Texas Tech's supposed to beat Memphis in this year every time they play. Same thing with Tennessee. But Penny still sort of focused on, you know, we've got to be this, we've got to be that, we've got to be this, we've got to be that. There was very little of that after the loss at Central Florida. And because I think, like he said, the loss felt different. It was just a road loss to a team that's probably going to be in the NCAA tournament. Those things are pretty common in college basketball. So you were supposed to lose the game and you lost the game, whatever. But there were some really good signs within that game. And when the head coach and the star player, independent of each other, are both saying similar things that, in their own words, in their own way, that they see something changing, I think that's good stuff if you're a Memphis fan. Again, from Penny, I see the tide turning. I see everything switching over. I see where we were just trying to do our own thing for a whole season and not buying in, and now guys are starting to buy in. Jeremiah Martin, I feel like we've got the best coach in this league. I feel like we've got the best team in this league. I feel like I'm the best player in this league. You can pick it apart if you want to, as we did, you know, 5 minutes ago, and point out how all of that stuff, or at least most of that stuff, is probably, if not definitely, untrue. But when you're sitting here at, you know, on February 18th, and you've still got the AAC tournament ahead of you, and you've got your best player believing not only in himself, but in his teammates and his coach, and you've got the coach publicly acknowledging in a way that he has rarely done this season. You know, sometimes there are coaches who they always see the best in everything. Oh, you know, we're getting better, even if they're not. Kids played hard, even if they didn't. We played well, even if they didn't. You know, Penny Hardaway hasn't been like that. He has been very critical, sometimes in a very specific way, about his team and his roster, his upperclassmen, his freshmen, and yet he wasn't here. And it's not some act, I don't think, because as we've learned, there really is no acting with him. You ask him what he thinks about anything, he'll tell you what he thinks about anything. Ask him what he thinks about Rick Barnes, he'll tell you what he thinks about Rick Barnes. I don't think it's an act. I think he really feels like this team is now taking a turn, even if the most recent result is a loss. So when it's February 18th and your team is, yes, overachieving relative to preseason expectations. Remember, they were outside of the top 100 at KenPom in the preseason. Right now they're 78th. I'm not trying to tell you that's the most improved team in the country, but it is better than preseason expectations. When you've got that team that is 15-11 overall, 7-6 in the league, but the star player is still bought in believing, and the coach is starting to see good stuff, I think that's a good sign, and it's among the reasons why, you know, Memphis has an opportunity to close this regular season positively, and then, like I've said literally since the preseason, or close to that at least, they're going to have a chance in the AAC tournament inside FedEx Forum to win an auto bid to the NCAA tournament. Because after they beat Central Florida at home, I pointed out on Twitter that that's the reason, no matter what happens going forward, Memphis fans are going to have a reason to believe, you know, through March, because the tournament is going to be played inside FedEx Forum, and Memphis is not going to be a significant underdog to anybody inside FedEx Forum. I got some pushback on that, because for whatever reason, sometimes people think you're trying to say something that you're not actually saying. I didn't say Memphis is going to win the AAC tournament. I won't pick them to do it. But they're not going to be a significant underdog to anybody. And the pushback came from Cincinnati fans and Houston fans, or Kentucky fans, Tennessee fans that are obsessed with Memphis for some reason. And I actually emailed Ken Pomeroy, who does projections that line up very closely with what oddsmakers place on games. And I said, put me a projected score on Houston, Memphis, because Houston's the best team in the league, right? Top 10 in the country, ranked 18th at KenPom. I said, what's your projected score if it were played right now for a game between Houston and Memphis inside FedEx Forum? He said 78-72.
Wow.
Six-point game. 78-72 Houston inside FedEx Forum. That's what KenPom would have projected right now. Memphis would not be a significant favorite to anybody inside FedEx Forum. That's proof. And that's what the score would be if Memphis had to play the best team in the league. What if it doesn't? What if Cincinnati knocks out Houston or UCF knocks out Houston? Every other team in the league, Cincinnati, Central Florida, Temple, 1-2, 3-point favorite over Memphis inside FedEx Forum. My point being, Memphis might not even have to play Houston to win an auto bid to the NCAA tournament. So, yeah, the most recent result is a loss. But it's a loss that has the best player encouraged, a loss that has the head coach encouraged, and it's a loss in a season that, you know, is going to lead up to a big, big moment, and that's that AAC tournament inside FedEx Forum where Memphis, no matter what happens this week or next week, will have an opportunity to maybe punch a ticket to the NCAA tournament in a season in which You know, the roster didn't suggest that was possible in the preseason. In a season where it was always about the recruiting class that's on the way, as opposed to the actual results of the games in Penny Hardaway's first year. So I thought the quotes were interesting coming out of that locker room, out of that press conference after the 79-72 loss to UCF over the weekend. Drew Hill is the reporter for the Commercial Appeal who was there. He's the one who talked to Jeremiah Martin. I'm going to talk to him next.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show. Live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM, ESPN.
This ain't a wave or a phase, because all that fades. This lifestyle's forever when you made. They tweet about the length I made them wait. What the you expect?
Tennessee took its first loss in the SEC over the weekend. 17-point loss at Rupp Arena to Kentucky. We'll talk about that and the top of the AP poll where I got Gonzaga number one in the top 25 and one Duke number one in the AP poll. For some reason, this is the most controversial thing in the world. We'll get into that in the next segment. Jeff Calkins is going to join me a little after 5 o'clock, but right now he covers Tiger basketball for the Commercial Appeal. His name's Drew Hill, making the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parrish Show Big Interview. Presented by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in Memphis. Now on 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Drew, it's Gary. How you doing, man?
What's going on, man?
Everything's good in my world. I appreciate you being here. I won't keep you too long, but obviously a big game, if not a positive result for Memphis down in Orlando. They lose 79-72 at Central Florida. And in a season where in post-game comments, the head coach has been critical of his team when there was a need to be critical of his team, Penny Hardaway didn't seem to be nearly as close to that as he usually is. He said, quote, "I see the tide turning. I see everything switching over. I see where we were just trying to do our own thing for a whole season and not buying in, and now guys are starting to buy in." These are rare positive comments from him after a loss. Do you get the sense that he does see that, yeah, it's not the result he wanted, but this team is starting to replicate what it is he wants them to do better than it has at any other point this season?
Yeah, I do get that sense. And really, honestly, I think it starts and ends with Jeremiah Martin and the fact that, you know, since the start of February, he's looked like the Jeremiah Martin that scores 19 points per game in conference play. And he's been really good at distributing the ball as well. And I think the change to go back to having him, you know, bring the ball up more often and play at the end of the games through him has actually made a big difference. And yes, I mean, there's reason to believe that this team is headed in the right direction after those three absolutely horrid, horrendous, awful, there aren't enough words to describe them starts on the road. Now they've put together two performances, one at East Carolina that wasn't, you know, particularly convincing, but it was enough to get a win. And then another game on the road at UCF in an environment that was probably the best road environment that they've played in this season. And to be in that game close, and they felt like it really slipped away there at the end. It felt like progress. It wasn't the huge disappointment, you know, sort of shock value at the end of the game of what just happened. So in that sense, yes, it did feel like progress.
They had been down 20 in the first half at Temple, lost. Been down 20 in the first half at Tulsa, lost. Been down 27-1 in the first half at South Florida, lost. And as you mentioned, earlier in the week, last week, on Wednesday night, they had won at East Carolina, but East Carolina is not a quality opponent. So this was the first opportunity against a quality opponent on the road since they had just been run off the court in the first half against quality opponents three straight times, and they obviously did not go down 20 in the first half in this one. They went back and forth with Central Florida. They led in the second half. Then Jeremiah Martin gets that technical foul. He's going back and forth with somebody on the UCF bench. How big of a moment was that in terms of, I mean, the game was right there, and after that sequence, I don't believe Memphis was ever tied again.
Yeah, I mean, it was a big moment, but at the same time, it did feel like a momentum swing. But at the end of the game, like, it didn't seem to affect Jeremiah at all. You know, he made that, he caught that inbounds pass, you know, with under 2 minutes to go and flipped it up for an and one. And then the next play, he came down and had a wraparound pass around a UCF defender to Rainier Thornton for a dunk. It didn't seem to affect him. But in general, yes, the team, you know, the technical foul did, you know, affect the momentum a little bit. What I thought was hilarious that people passed up is after the game, you know, we asked Jeremiah, or I asked Jeremiah to sort of explain what happened with the technical. And he said, well, it was something he shouldn't have done. He shouldn't have been talking to the bench. And Penny said that. He shouldn't have been talking to the bench. But he just didn't understand why it wasn't a double technical, because you have someone who's not in the game on the bench talking smack to him, and then he's responding to it. And he gets called for the technical where the guy on the bench didn't. And what was hilarious that no one really picked up on was Jeremiah took another shot at the guy after the game. He was like, yeah, and I don't even know who that guy was. I'd never seen that guy in my life. He wasn't even on the scouting report. So, I mean, that was pretty funny too. But yeah, he was really fired up about that technical after the game. He was like frazzled from start to finish through his interview, staring down the hallway. It wasn't like the sheer disappointment that he had when he scored 41 and lost at USF. It was more, I can't believe that we just lost that game.
Talking to Drew Hill from the Commercial Appeal. He was in Orlando for Memphis, 79-72, lost to Central Florida. He's on Twitter, at @DrewHill_CA. So you talked to Jeremiah Martin afterward, and among the things that he told you was the following. I feel like I'm the best player in this league. I feel like we have the best coach in this league. I feel like we're the best team in this league, to be honest. Which of those points is the least true? Memphis is the best team in the league. Penny's the best coach in the league. Jeremiah Martin's the best player in the league.
Memphis is the best team in the league is the least true. I would go, right. Memphis is the best team in the league is the least true. Penny would be second. Penny being the best coach would be second. And then Jeremiah being the best player in the league would be the closest to true. That's how I would rank them.
Yeah, I think that's exactly
right.
I think that's exactly right. But it is interesting that in the same hour that Penny, even after a loss, is saying, hey, I see this team coming together. I see this team starting to play the right way. I see these guys buying in. You get Jeremiah Martin delivering that quote, even if it's inaccurate, probably on every point. Go ask any college basketball coach in the country who is losing nearly as often as he wins. Because Memphis is 15-11 overall, 7-6 in the American. Go talk to any coach who has spent the past couple of months losing about as much as he's won, and they'll tell you that they've got issues with their team. You know, the players are maybe not starting to buy in, but stopping to buy in. Go talk to the Indiana staff right now about what they're going through. And so I thought it was interesting that Penny's seeing more good than bad right now, and Jeremiah Martin, who is the star player, is seemingly... It'd be one thing if he simply said, I think I'm the best player in this league. But he didn't stop there. He roped his coach into it and his team into it. In other words, you've got a guy sitting here middle of February who, again, even if it's misguided and wrong, still seems to believe in himself, believe in his team, and believe in his coach. And so I don't mind him saying what he said. I might roll my eyes and giggle at what he said, but I think that's a good sign when you've got players still talking that way this deep into a season that is something less than perfect.
Yeah, I mean, I think you nailed it right there. You know, Jeremiah is the leader of this team. He is the guy that, you know, when things are going wrong, they turn and look at Jeremiah and they're like, what are we going to do now? So for Jeremiah to sort of boost up his teammates, even in a wrong statement, I mean, if he would have said, I feel like I've been the best player since, you know, this month in the conference, it'd be totally factual. But with guys sure. like Jaron Cumberland and Shiz Olsen, you kind of, you know, question it a little bit. But, yeah, what Jeremiah did, it shouldn't bother anyone, especially if you're a Memphis fan. You know, there are people on Twitter, of course, which, you know, there's always people on Twitter, but who are
Boy, don't tell me.
You shouldn't be saying things that aren't true. But, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, does it matter? does it really matter to Memphis' season other than it's a confidence boost? I don't think it does. So I have no issue with that, and I think Penny liked it because, you know, Penny's response on feeling the tides turning was a reaction to the comments that Jeremiah made. Jeremiah made the comments first, and I asked Penny, this is what Jeremiah said, what do you think? And he said, well, you know, he's just confident right now. That's just the way he is right now, and I have no problem with it. So if Penny doesn't have a problem with it, I don't think Memphis fans should have a problem with it either.
Talking to Drew Hill, a beat writer, Tiger Basketball for the Commercial Appeal. He's on Twitter at @DrewHill_CA. Antoine Jones played 5 minutes. Obviously, he's dealing with health issues. Is this something they fear is going to linger, or do they think he'll ever get back to 100% in this season?
Well, right now the sense is he's not healthy. And I get the sense as a beat writer that this has been something that's been going on for a while now, you know, sort of since he played 5 minutes at USF. And then, you know, they held him out at East Carolina with plantar fasciitis. And now you're starting to see, you know, he's playing sort of those minutes in the first half where some of the guys who were going to play a long stretch, you know, in the second half need a quick break, and then he's coming out and he's not going back in. He's just not healthy right now. And, you know, it's always a mental battle with him as well. So for him to have an injury and have to sit out, you know, you just hope that it also doesn't take a toll on his confidence as well. So, you know, they're gauging it. I expect that he will play down the season, but we'll see how many of his minutes are meaningful at the end of the game, sort of crucial minutes.
Wrapping up here with Drew Hill from the Commercial Appeal on Twitter at @DrewHill_CA. Last thing before I let you go, how big is it that the AAC tournament is going to be inside FedEx Forum? Not because of the opportunity that it will give them in that week, but because it feels like every loss that they take that otherwise could be demoralizing, because you've got this very reasonable thing waiting for you in March, it feels like the season never feels over, even if the season isn't going the way Penny wanted it to go or Jeremiah Martin wanted it to go. I just feel like having that thing sitting there at home for you in March with an opportunity that isn't, you know, totally unrealistic to still make the NCAA tournament, it just feels like it's the type of thing that allows the team to still stay focused, not get too down, even when they are losing road games more often than they'd like to.
Yeah, it's great for their psyche, for
right.
Sure. And you see that in the fact that, you know, it gets brought up almost every single time after a loss, a post game, or any time you talk about progress. Penny, like, almost never fails to mention that the AAC tournament is here in Memphis. So it's great for them in that sense. I think it makes coaching easier if you're Penny, if you have that opportunity sitting there waiting for you. And he's made it very clear all year he's not backing off the expectation that this team is going to the NCAA tournament. So, you know, whether or not the at-large bid is out of the question, which it is at this point, he's still not changing that expectation. So, you know, as a team, what else do you want them to do? You know, you want them to give up and quit? Like, of course it's great that they have the AAC tournament. So you really can't expect anything else other than confidence going into that tournament, especially since it's at home.
That is Drew Hill from the Commercial Appeal. You can read him, commercialappeal.com, and you should. Follow him on Twitter, @DrewHill_CA. Great stuff, man. I appreciate you being here. I'll catch up with you real soon.
All right, thanks, Gary. Happy Blue Chips 25th anniversary.
Yeah. Happy Blue Chips 25th anniversary indeed. Thanks, buddy. That's Drew Hill from the Commercial Appeal. I think Drew has exactly right to use the proper word. It's great for their psyche, because when you start looking at brackets, projected brackets, and I'm not pretending that players often do. I thought it was interesting a few weeks ago when the bracket reveal was on CBS, where the NCAA tournament selection committee unveils the top four seeds in each region if the tournament were to start on that day. And Matt Norlander was, I don't know, somewhere, maybe Duke, Virginia, and asked one of the Duke players about it, maybe R.J. Barrett,
mm-hmm.
he didn't even know.
No.
Had no idea. And I was at Nevada. Mm-hmm. Nevada was 14th overall, so a four seed in the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. I asked Trey Porter, their starting big, who had like a career-high 20 points, 11 rebounds, something like that. Had no idea. Mm. So it's interesting to me sometimes, coaches and fans and media personalities focus so much on all of this stuff, and the players, I think sometimes people forget, they're just 18, 20-year-old kids. They don't live in the same world we live in.
For sure.
They just, you know, they don't, they're unaware of a lot of the stuff that, that we obsess about. And so I'm not pretending that the Memphis players are living and dying with every bracket update Jerry Palm or Joe Lunardi publishes. But you know, it can, if you, in a normal season, you know, okay, our hopes of going to the NCAA tournament are over. You know, from a realistic perspective, you're not going to get an at-large bid. It can start to be draining on you. Like, you just go, okay, well, then what's the mm-hmm. point? Players, even if they don't know they're doing it, clock out all the time. And yet, you know, Drew pointed out, he thinks Penny brings up the AAC tournament being at FedEx Forum basically after every game. Smart. Because it serves as a reminder to your players, okay, we lost another game on the road. Doesn't matter. To go to the NCAA tournament, guess what? We don't have to win a road game. We don't have to win a neutral court game. We have to win games in our building. And we've already done that a whole bunch this season. Almost never lost at home this season. So you keep reminding players of that. It really does have an impact on their psyche. I thought Drew Hill used the right word. Because you can lose at UCF, you can lose at South Florida, you can lose at Tulsa, you can lose at Temple, you can lose at Houston. These are things that can start to get a team where they go, what's the point? It's time to clock out. But as long as you can keep reminding them, we don't have to do anything other than what we know we're capable of doing to go to the NCAA tournament, which is win home games. As long as you can keep reminding them of that, it can keep them engaged and focused a little more than they might otherwise be if they just took their 11th loss of the season. And like I told you in the opening segment, Memphis will not be a significant underdog to anybody, Houston included, inside FedEx Forum. I thought this was interesting. You know, KenPom has a formula that highlights, you know, how good somebody is at home as opposed to on the road. Like the difference in basketball team, it's under the category home court advantage. So how much better are you at home mm-hmm. than you are on neutral courts or in away games? And Memphis ranks 13th in the country. In that.
Oh, wow.
There is nothing, statistically speaking, that Memphis is better at than being a home team.
And well, so, that's great. This year's the good year for that.
It's a great year for
them
because the American Athletic Conference Tournament will be inside FedEx Forum, where Memphis has one of the greatest, mm-hmm. according to the formula that KenPom uses, in terms of how you perform at home, on a neutral court, on the road. Right. Memphis is a most different team than almost anybody in the country at home as opposed to when it's not at home. Again, Memphis's home court advantage, based on performance, ranks 13th in the country this season in Division I basketball. That's another thing I think Penny Hardaway should continue to remind his players of today, tomorrow, and every day leading up to the American Athletic Conference Tournament, because it's a tangible thing that can remind them when we get to that tournament, we don't have to do anything that we don't already know we're capable of doing. Like, can Memphis go win on the road against a quality opponent? Hadn't done it yet. Maybe they can't. Can Memphis go beat top 20 teams on neutral courts? Hadn't done it yet. Maybe they can't. Can Memphis beat anybody inside FedEx Forum? Yeah. Not anybody. Not Duke. Not Virginia. I'm not putting them in that class. Can it beat anybody in its league inside FedEx Forum? I think you can reasonably say yes. And that's why this season, no matter what happens later this week at Tulane, no matter what happens, I mean, later this week against Tulane, mm-hmm. no matter what happens at Wichita State, no matter what happens in that February 26th game against Temple, March 2nd game at Cincinnati, March 9th game against Tulsa, no matter what happens going forward in the rest of this regular season, they got a big opportunity waiting for them, American Athletic Conference Tournament. Kentucky handed Tennessee its first SEC loss of the season Saturday night inside Rupp Arena. So we got a new number one. I made it Gonzaga in the top 25 and one. It's Duke in the AP poll. We'll talk about Tennessee's loss, Kentucky's win, and the national college basketball rankings right after this break.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM, ESPN.
It feels so good, it should cost. Brought an alligator, I ain't talking Lacoste. Made me say, like a mix of Master P and Rick Ross.
Jeff Calkins, your award-winning columnist, Daily Memphian, host of the Jeff Calkins Show. He's going to join me a little after 5 o'clock. We'll get back into Tiger basketball with him. But right now, if you don't mind, I got 4 stories I'd like to discuss.
4 stories presented by the Bluff Restaurant and Bar. 4 notable stories at 4:44. Gary tends to lose focus, start telling stories, and forget what he wanted to talk about at certain points every afternoon. So we've developed a device that ensures he'll touch on important things you need to know each day at this time. This is GP's 4 notable stories at 4:44. Story number 1.
There were a lot of people who thought that Tennessee had not played a currently ranked team in more than 2 months heading into this past weekend's game at Rupp Arena against Kentucky, and that it would catch up with them. And I don't know whether that caught up with them or not, but if you were somebody who spent last week making that argument, you were in a good place on Saturday night. Final score, Kentucky 86, Tennessee 69. So the Vols' 19-game winning streak was snapped. The Vols have their first SEC loss, and Kentucky's season could not look more drastically different today than it did on opening night. They start this season losing to Duke by 34 points in the Champions Classic in Indianapolis. And ever since then, they've been pretty damn good. They have 3 losses since November 6th. They're 21-4 on the season. The 3 losses are a 1-point loss in overtime to Seton Hall, a 2-point loss at Alabama, and a 2-point loss on a controversial ending. The controversial ending being that basket interference was not called when it probably should have been. Definitely should have been a 2-point loss to LSU. Outside of that, they've won every game. They've beaten a Louisville team that's ranked in the top 20. They've beaten a North Carolina team that's ranked in the top 15. And on Saturday night, they beat a Tennessee team that was ranked number 1 in the country at the time. And it's just a reminder that, and I know this is a tricky topic in Memphis because some Memphians, not all, but some still hold ill will against John Calipari because he dared take the Kentucky job when it was offered. It's remarkable that every season that he's been at Kentucky, he's had his team operating at a high level, right around this time, and into March. Every season, without exception, except for the 1 year where he lost his best player to a torn ACL. And people look back on that year. It was the year after the national championship. They look back on that year, and they just remember it as an NIT season for John Calipari at Kentucky. But in reality, that team was on a winning streak, ranked in the top 20 at KenPom, playing well, getting better, like all his teams do. And then Nerlens Noel, the best player, tore his ACL, and then it spiraled on him. But if Nerlens Noel doesn't get hurt, that's an NCAA tournament team. Probably a team that could have at least gone to a Sweet 16, maybe deeper. And so here we are again. And it's why, I go on radio in Louisville and Lexington all the time because they care about basketball in those markets, same way we care about college basketball in our market.
Sure.
And so I get asked to go on those stations all the time. And every once in a while, including this season, John's team, because it's heavily reliant on first-year players, will struggle a little bit. Lose a game that maybe they were supposed to win, get run off the court in a game that was supposed to be competitive, and, the fans are freaking out. where is this season going? Can you really win at a high level building teams in this way? And one of the things I always say is, one way or another, by middle of February, late February, the team will probably be something close to what it was supposed to be. If only because that's the way it almost always goes at Kentucky. And so this season is just another example. It continues the streak. Whatever Kentucky does under John Calipari in November or December, and sometimes it does great things. Like sometimes these teams are just awesome from start to finish. 2010 Kentucky with John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, great example of that. 2012 Kentucky with Anthony Davis, great example of that. 2015 Kentucky with Karl Anthony Towns, great example of that. Sometimes the teams are great from start to finish, and there are no questions at any point. But when the teams aren't great from start to finish, they still end up being great, or at least very, very good, basically without exception. And so here we are again.
Story number two.
So Kentucky beating Tennessee ensured that there would be a new number one in any college basketball rankings that had Tennessee number one. And the AP poll has got Duke, and that's unsurprising because you can make a very reasonable argument for Duke. Plus, Duke was number two in the AP poll last week, and that's usually the way the AP poll works. The team that's number two moves to number one if the number one team loses. But I've got Gonzaga number one in the top 25 and one. And somewhat for the same reasons. Like, number one lost, I moved number two to number one. It's just that I had Gonzaga number two, not Duke number two, in the top 25 and one for weeks now. And so I moved Gonzaga just straight up to number one. And I did anticipate that this would create some pushback from Duke fans because, again, it's very easy to make an argument for Duke number one. And when Duke's going to be number one in the AP poll and the coaches poll, anything that runs contrary to that is going to get attention. But the idea, and because I've got this on Twitter a little bit, that I did this for attention is just crazy. Like, Parrish moved Gonzaga to number one because he wanted to get attention. What do you mean? I had Gonzaga ahead of Duke last week, the week before that, 2 days ago. I've had Gonzaga above Duke since Duke lost to Syracuse inside Cameron Indoor. So, like, I've had the order the same for a while. And nothing that happened Saturday, Gonzaga winning a game by double digits, Duke winning a game by double digits, made me change the order of Gonzaga and Duke. It just made me move Gonzaga up one spot and Duke up one spot. And so now Gonzaga's number one. And I'm not trying to argue that Gonzaga's really the best team in the country. I don't know that. I don't know that they're not, but I don't know that they are. And I understand why you might believe Duke is, because Duke has Zion Williamson and R.J. Barrett and Cam Reddish and Trey Jones, four possible lottery picks, perhaps the top three picks in the 2019 NBA draft. They're terrific. But the idea that it's crazy to have Gonzaga number one is crazy to me. Gonzaga's 25-2. Got a neutral court win over, wait for it, Duke, and zero losses to teams ranked outside of the top 10. That's an incredible resume. 12-2 against the top 100 at KenPom. That's impressive. They're in possession of the nation's longest winning streak, 16 games. That's impressive. Those 16 games, 16 double-digit wins, coming by an average of 31.3 points per game. And they have the nation's best offensive efficiency rating, and they're ranked number one in the net rankings that the NCAA uses. Why is it crazy to have that team number one? Particularly when the team that everybody else has number one, it beat that team on a neutral court. And maybe if they played again tomorrow, it wouldn't go the same way. But they did play once. And I'm not saying that head-to-head matchup has to be the determining factor. But it is a data point. And it's one that works in Gonzaga's favor. And so I know that they don't play the same type of schedule that Duke plays or Kentucky plays or any power conference team plays once January hits, because they play in the West Coast Conference, not the ACC or the Big Ten or the SEC or whatever. It's not their fault. I'm not going to hold their league affiliation against them. And if you are trying to be skeptical of Gonzaga, that's all you're doing. You're holding their league affiliation against them. Just like I say about Eric Musselman at Nevada all the time. It's not his fault that the Mountain West Conference isn't good. It's not his job to make the Mountain West Conference good. It's his job to make Nevada awesome. He's done that. not going to hold it against him. Same thing with Mark Few. It's not his job to make the West Coast Conference good. He has no control over that. It's his job to make Gonzaga a monster. And they are beating everybody's brains in. 16-game winning streak, 16 double-digit wins, average margin of victory, 31.3. Best, and again, offensive efficiency ranking, that's adjusted to take into account the competition. Still ranks number one in the country. The net rankings that the NCAA uses, Gonzaga, number one in the country. So if you want to argue in favor of Duke, you can do that reasonably. I could do it for you. I don't have any issue with somebody who says Duke should be ranked number one. But I don't know why anybody has an issue with somebody who says Gonzaga actually should be ranked number one, because Gonzaga is awesome, and they've been awesome all season.
Story number three.
NBA All-Star Game was last night. Team LeBron beat Team Giannis 178-164 after taking 90 three-pointers in the game. Team LeBron took 90. Team Giannis took 77. So there were a combined 167 three-point attempts in this All-Star game. It's remarkable to me. This is a big All-Star weekend in the NBA is a massive event.
Yeah.
It's big for TNT. It's big for the sport. It gets a lot of attention. And the actual, like, centerpiece of the whole thing is just absolute garbage.
Yeah, it's crap.
Like, I don't know why anybody would watch it. Like, I had it on, like, just on as background while I was working last night.
Yep.
But I have no interest in it whatsoever.
No.
It's not a real basketball game. People aren't trying the way they'd normally try. The game's not being played the way it's normally played.
No.
It's
a dunk contest and a three-point contest.
Well, that can be interesting, I guess, if you're into that. Yeah.
But no, but the actual games, it's three-pointers and dunks.
You know? Oh, yeah. No, that's all it is.
Yeah.
And it's largely boring.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're waiting for this moment, like Steph bouncing a ball.
Yeah.
For Giannis to dunk. Like, that's a neat moment, but whatever. There's almost nothing that can happen that we haven't seen before. It's why, listen, I got really
that's
no
what she
use
said.
For any of the All-Star games.
Yeah.
But at least in the Major League Baseball All-Star game, you get a pitcher who's going to throw one inning, and you get a hitter who is, like, he's going to get maybe one or two at-bats.
Yeah, you've made that point before about the pitcher, because the pitcher is coming in, and they're coming in guns blazing. Like, they're going to try to throw, if they can hold 100, they're going to throw 102, you know?
They are trying to strike you out like it's Game 7 of the World Series.
Right, because they're not getting much action.
And you're trying to not get struck out like it's Game 7 of the World Series.
Yeah.
So in the baseball All-Star game, you have these incredible, intense
matchups.
Maybe intense is overstating.
No, but there's some action, right.
But the pitcher's doing what it is he would do under normal circumstances.
Right.
And the hitter is doing what it is he would do under normal circumstances. It looks more like a real baseball game. Mm-hmm. You're not going to see guys, you know, diving to
lobbing
try to
the game. You're not lobbing the ball in the strike zone, right?
Well, no, I mean, like, you're not, it's not quite like you won't see somebody fly, you know, dive into the stands to try to catch a fly ball. Like, nobody's risking injury over this stuff. But from a pitcher hitter perspective, the pitcher is treating this moment like a real moment,
right?
And the hitter is treating the moment like a real moment. In the NBA All-Star game, it's just there's not a single possession that feels that way. It's just like running up and down the court and three-pointers and dunks. And so if you can be entertained by it, congratulations. But I find it to be a big, big weekend that leads up to whatever. Honestly, like, I'd rather just see an extended J. Cole halftime show than watch more of the NBA All-Star game. But Team LeBron still prevails, 178-164. Maybe we'll do it again next year.
Story number four.
Memphis Express fell to 0-2 this weekend. They lost 20-18. Just a deflating, demoralizing victory for a professional football franchise. Jeff Calkins was there. I'm going to talk to him about it next.